Hey, chances are that if you like Film Sack, which you're about to hear, you will also like the Frog Pants Morning Show that happens every Monday through Thursday and then a bonus show on Fridays. It's called The Morning Stream, or TMS for short, and it stars myself and Brian Ibbett. We've hosted this thing for nearly 8 years, maybe a little more than that now that I think about it. And I don't know, we never tell you guys about it. So, hey, Film Sackers, you might like it. Check it out. Frogpants.com/TMS. Now on with Film Sack.
Some of this is legend, but at least this much is fact. When rioting citizens of France destroyed the Bastille, they discovered within its records this mysterious entry. Prisoner number 64389000, the man in the Iron Mask.
To have kissed his hair and smelled his breath as he slept.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is 422 episodes of Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by, bah, who needs accents anyway, Dunaway?
Not me. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Oh, my God, what have I agreed to? Here I find myself in my Iron Mask fleeing my captors by riding front-style piggyback under the robe of a musketeer. Surely this is not my best life. I imagine my best life would involve strapping paper cones to the forehead of a small pink pig and chasing him about as he squeals like a teeny little unicorn who has stolen my jewels. Unhand my valuables, you magical swine! But I forget myself. Remember who you are, Philippe. A guy in a mask riding front-style piggyback under the robe of a musketeer. Do I smell baguettes? Oh, wait. Would appear I have found the source of the baguettes and B.O. A hidden pocket inside the robe contains baked goods. I'm sure this musketeer would not mind if I consumed just a little bit. Nope, that's not bread. Quickly, Philippe, retreat to your happy place. That's it. Close your eyes. Take your mind elsewhere. Ah, there you are, piggy. Unhand my valuables, you magical swine. And that's what was going under that robe, if you was curious. If you was thinking to yourself, what the hell's going on under that robe? That was it.
Yeah. It was a pig. Yeah, the pig's a little bit of the pig in the bucket this week, by the way. Kind of lost track of where the hell the pig went.
Who got those jewels?
Yeah, someone got the jewels. Who knows who? Also with us, Randy. I think Gerard Depardieu wants us to see his anus, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, hi. Brian.
Good morning.
Wow.
Randy.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you boys about the time I was the most successful event planner in the world in the highly profitable field of fancy party planning?
No.
True story. It's how I made my first million and ended up in my first jail. And you can too. The first part, you know. You can too if you follow my three easy steps. Number one, charge extra for guns and swords. I'm not saying you're going to stop fancy people from bringing small arms to a fancy party. Quite the opposite. I'm saying you're going to make a fortune with a surcharge on them weapons at the door. They ain't never been a fancy party where even the waiters weren't packing heat. Number two, speaking of the waiters, you should only hire supernaturally talented staff. Is the rich and powerful guest of honor about to storm out? Your staff opens them big double doors from the other side because they can sense him coming. Mm-hmm. Has someone just said something highly embarrassing to one person out of the 500 people who were present? Your orchestra somehow stops playing. Number three, rich people are all horn dogs who think they're going to get laid from wearing masks. So you sell them multiple extra masks. Mind blown. Some of these fellers are going to want to hold a mask out in front of their face while they're wearing a mask. And then I tell you what, they take the another mask. Panties drop and you come out on top.
Wow.
Quite the production. The last part. That's my favorite.
That was pretty good.
No one will ever complain about the volume levels. No.
Right? Oh, I love it. It was actually perfect.
It was
perfect. I thought it played in. I thought it played in.
I know, but the idea that they could ever, ever complain again is it's gone now. With us finally, Brian, he wears the mask. It does not wear him, Ibbit.
I'm throwing this extra little bit in here because it reminded me of this when you played that clip at the beginning. Okay. Hey, do you need a prisoner? Just call 643-89000. Okay.
No. Oh, very nice. All right. Very nice.
Thank you. All right. Yeah. Here we go. Now the real intro. Hey, just wanted to thank you guys for taking this meeting with me. I mean, when I heard that you guys were making a Man in the Iron Mask movie, I thought to myself, hey, this movie could really use the Bryan Adams touch. So a little about myself. I'm a multi-platinum haired recording artist, and I've been doing rock theme songs for period piece blockbusters for years. You might be familiar with this one. Everything I do it for you, from Robin Hood. Yeah, that was me. How about All for Love for the Three Musketeers film? Yeah. No? Can we maybe just reuse that one for this? Okay, all right, never mind. So I've been playing around with a few ideas for this one, and here's one I'm particularly fond of. I am Iron Mask Man, got my head stuck in a tuna fish can. Is it, no? Okay, too edgy? All right, I get it. All right, here's another one I've been working on. You know it's true that everything I do, I can't get this mask off my head because it's made of iron. No? All right, okay, last one. This one I'm particularly proud of. I'm trapped by my own desires. But loving you is my goal. So I'll pull you close to me and hold you tight. And I can stick my tongue out of this mouth hole.
Oh, God. No?
All right. Thank you for your time. Bye-bye.
I didn't know you had a Bryan Adams in you. That's a shock.
That's the first time I've tried. That's just what I assume he sounds like, because that's what he sounds like when he sings.
Yeah, that's true. I've never heard him talk, now that you mention it.
Did I sound Canadian?
I felt very much like Robin Hood during this film.
Oh, just yeah. It's of that time. It's later than that.
Robin Hood, Three Musketeers.
Yeah. I mean,
the 90s were a strange time.
Yes. I mean,
I have no idea what Bryan Adams sounds like when he talks, but I know when Richard Marx talks, he doesn't sound like he sings.
Yeah.
So right. I always want to believe that, you know, a guy is going to come off stage and give an interview and have this totally other voice.
Give me a song by him. I can't think of a Richard Marx song.
Right Here Waiting.
Hold on to the night.
Yeah. See, how would he talk? He would be.
Hey, I'm Richard Marx. I sounded a lot like Bryan Adams about a minute ago.
Perfect.
Well, I mean, do we really think that Dave Matthews gets off stage and says, "Hi, thank you for coming to this meeting.
I'm glad
you were able to make it."
Yeah, he actually kind of does. He's actually one of the closer ones. I met him. I got to talk to him for like a half a second, like across, like from where we were sitting, because we had really crappy seats at one of his concerts, and he was coming by just checking out the audience. And he stopped by and just talked to us for just a minute. Oh my God.
He really talks like he sings. That's
weird.
I wouldn't have expected that. Like I've heard Morrissey in a documentary, and it's definitely not him going, "So anyway, I was mad." Right. Like, he doesn't do that. He just talks like a normal guy. Yeah. So that's surprising.
I will tell you, the Crash Test Dummies guy, Brad Roberts, sounds like he does when he sings.
Really?
And you know what? You know what? Country Western singers, the men mostly, sound like they do when they sing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's easy because they're.
You talking about Randy Travis?
That's because they can do an accent. Unlike.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. So this is on the tales of Titanic.
Yeah.
And I was expecting something here more French than we got from DiCaprio
any of those people. Like you got an Irish guy. You got an American. John Malkovich is like, just be yourself, John. Okay, I'll just talk like I normally do.
Can we talk about the Chernobyl problem? Like, there's really And I don't just mean, you know, meltdown of nuclear power source.
Right.
There's really a discussion happening lately about whether or not you as an audience wants to hear, you know, a full accent, a bad accent, your own accent, and you just, you know, you're fine with it, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I actually felt like the fact that there was a broad mix in this movie was to its credit for me as the listener. Like, I felt like, yeah, DiCaprio's sort of weird non-regional American accent didn't fit with all the others around him because there were so many Brits. But, like, when you start to sort of cram it all together, my brain checked out and I was fine.
Well, okay, so I listened to the podcast connected to that Chernobyl show, and he talks about that decision they made not to have Russian accents and to have everyone just have their own accent. But part of that discussion was, no Americans allowed, because he felt like that just threw it.
They knew that would take people right out of it.
It took people out of it. And so that's what happened here to me. I was fine with all the different accents except for the American ones. And they were, I guess, just the two. It was DiCaprio and Malkovich. But,
And you know what's funny is Malkovich didn't even bother me one bit.
Not at all.
Yeah, DiCaprio.
DiCaprio,
That's how I felt. Unintentional.
The two were DiCaprio and Peter Sarsgaard, right?
Three.
Like Peter Sarsgaard, no relation to Elder Sarsgaard, is like, he's like from Illinois or something, and he's just got this totally like bland Midwestern accent, and it kind of throws you.
It does too, but also they made this decision to not only not have them affect any sort of accent, but they did make them not have any like conjunctions or shortenings of words. So DiCaprio's always going, he will go to the place and we have not seen, you know, there's no habits. Yeah, there's no can'ts. Like they just go straight to the, let's draw it all out. Like who does that in Star Trek? Like Spock or somebody.
Data.
So
no contractions. Yeah.
Yeah. No contractions or not conjunctions. I meant contractions, but when they don't do that, then it makes it worse for me. I'm just like, okay, if you're going to have him just talk, then just talk. Like, don't mess around with this. I'd be fine with that, maybe, I think.
And maybe the problem is that when Malkovich does it, it just feels like, all right, I could see a dude like this in old France or, wherever this is, France, who would talk like this. Because it's the way he delivers the lines, even without an accent, feels genuine to me. Mm-hmm. DiCaprio's like, all right, so... we're going to go ahead and just like take this, these guys from over here and, I'll take the yellow sash. That's cool. Yeah. All right. Cool.
we all agree that DiCaprio was just high dollar casting and wasn't the perfect 100%. Fit for
them. No, he was the draw. The trivia makes a point about test audiences and how he was the factor. Like everything about it was him.
But I'll tell you, he did make me hate him. Oh, he did really good at that. Yeah. He did, feel sympathy for him,
dude,
too.
Dude, so DiCaprio's a good actor. Like, straight up, the dude knows. I mean, there's a reason he's in every thing that gets, like, huge Oscar nominations. It's not just on his looks anymore. You know, he's good. And he's good in this when he needs to be good. When he needs to go full DiCaprio, he's great. When he's just sort of brooding, it's like, whatever, dude. Like, anybody could do that. But But his, you know, tell him to wear the mask until you like it is a pretty intense moment.
Oh my God, I laughed. I laughed so many times during this movie, and I couldn't tell if I was supposed to be laughing, but it was just so entertaining.
Yeah, it's I'm gonna argue with you there. I'm gonna say
no. This movie is absolutely a piece of trash, but I loved it so much.
I saw this in the movie theater back in 98. Kim and I went and saw it on a date night. I remember it very vividly because I had these hot dogs at this really great place, but it made me fart the entire movie. I farted the whole movie. Nice.
You think that affected your enjoyment?
Yeah. Just take it out for, let's go to hot dogs.
Yeah.
Let's go.
It's weird. They have this place called J-Dogs, which is unbelievably good gourmet hot dog things. I mean, it's like legit good. And not like a normal hot dog, like normal boring hot dogs are dumb, but these were just incredible. But I just put all the stuff on it. You shouldn't. And we're in this theater and about an hour later.
You did the most American thing you could do before going to see one of the, well, I guess, kind of Frenchish thing you could do at the time, probably.
The most Americanized version of a French thing that I can see.
I'm watching a French movie, but it smells very American in here. Who's farting hot dogs?
I mean, the most legitimate person in the movie, we've said the name of it, The Man in the Iron Mask, everybody.
That's a good question. They could
look at their iPod.
Sure.
If they have an iPod.
Yeah, they have a...
whatever their creative jukebox, they can just look at the little LCD screen.
The year was 2003, and Brian had his iPod. Gerard Depardieu is the most... he's a weird dude anyway. Like, he's a kind of giant psychopath these days. Plus, you know, he's known for just being gross and whatever. And in this movie, they showcase that a little bit.
Quite so hard. They lean straight into that nasty Depardieu because even his uniform is dirty and filthy, and you know, he's the flatulent Frenchman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
there's
just like,
no way there's no way that this guy doesn't smell like a creme brulee shoved into a Tupperware bin left out in the sun for half a day.
Kinda. That's a good way to put it, because he's gross. Yeah. Like, he's just straight up gross. But
he was great as Porthos.
Yes, he's the right casting for that. And he's the most, for me, he's the best casting. I think everybody else feels a little weird. I think Malkovich is intense, but Malkovich is always intense. So
everybody else, the casting is, hey, were you a bad guy in an 80s film? Great. We want you to play a musketeer.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. First of all, I love Jeremy Irons. Every time he spoke, I was like, oh my God, this is so great. I love to hear him talk. But every time he said King, immediately I was thinking of Lions and, you know, Lion King and everything else. Immediately.
Hmm. Across the board, like, I'm glad this wasn't a movie that cast a bunch of 30-year-olds as 50-year-olds. Like, that, because that's how it would be now, right now, today. Yeah. It would be 30-year-olds as 50-year-olds.
Yeah. I'm glad.
But I also felt like Depardieu and a little bit Malkovich were just a little too old for what they were doing. Like, I would prefer someone who was that age, but was like Keanu, who's like got a lot of, like, I don't know, youthful appearance. I don't know. I never once felt like, oh, these are the Three Musketeers. Mm. They can do anything. They're going to, like, there's a wall of muskets firing down a hallway at them. And I'm like, I know they're going to survive this, but that's unexplainable because these are old guys.
It feels like some serious slumming, though, for actors like Gabriel Byrne, even Malkovich, even Jeremy Irons. Like, I feel like they're above this stuff. It's just not great, not well executed enough for me to think that those dudes ought to be in this. Because I really like Gabriel Byrne.
This is the film that you look at and go, "Oh, all star cast."
Kinda,
this is the definition of all star cast.
I guess, even
Hugh Laurie as the King's advisor was just like a pleasant thing. Was he doing much for us in the U.S.?
Stuart Little, was that in the 2000s?
Yeah, I think that was 2000.
That was 2000s. Also, okay. All of House was 2000s. Like, yeah, I think he was still, for me, it was still Blackadder time for him.
Right.
Well, that was this is like a good 7 years before House gets started.
Yeah.
I just want to ask, though. I realize that there's a problem right now in criticizing what we like as entertainment, because everybody's really, really enjoying saying how they would have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes other people feel weird. Like, I don't need the whole world to give me their rendition of how they would have done an episode of a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, how awesome would it have been if in that scene where the Three Musketeers decide to charge the King's muskets, if they had all died? The Man in the Iron Mask lives somehow, but if they had all died right there, that would have been so much better for this movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, it would have been a better choice.
All for one and one for all. And they could all, like, reach over and go, all for one for all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, at the very least, I wish they would have gotten, like, injured and shot in the arms and legs and, like, barely made it out of there. But you're right. It's a better ending, or it's a better way to finish that stuff out. It would have been, you would have missed out on your DiCaprio Malkovich moment of, hey, will you be my new dad?
Be my new dad.
Yeah. I just found out the other guy was my dad. Now he's gone.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's just it's an interesting thing, because I feel like there's a movie here that could be remade, or when they were making it, they could have gone some directions that would have made it really cool and meaningful and poignant. And instead, a lot of it just falls into, like, sloppy typical category. Like, it just feels like it's just pushed out of a machine a little bit.
I'm curious, like, because this is a pretty famous story. There was an actual prisoner in France in like the late 1600s.
This much is true.
At the same time as Louis XIV, who, you know, who had an iron mask on and was treated like royalty, blah, blah, blah. I'm just curious, like, before this movie, did you guys have anything, like, any of you read Alexandre Dumas as a kid?
No, like I knew about the Three Musketeers stuff I was familiar with from when I was a kid. I eat a lot of the candy bars. So I'm into that.
You like the whipped chocolate and
those are good.
It's a connection.
Have you had the strawberry one? Oh, those are so good.
They are good, and they don't make enough of them, and they're not here at the moment. I can never find those, but my gosh, those are good.
So good.
It was originally, by the way, in Neapolitan. It was that's why it's Three Musketeers.
You're right.
Chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry, and the covered with chocolate.
But like real Neapolitan ice cream, people would just eat the chocolate and throw the others out, is what you're saying.
Mark, we need more Neapolitan ice cream.
I like the strawberry.
I do too.
I had zero. This movie was a zero on my radar. I knew nothing except I've seen the cover art before. I had no idea that it had to do anything with the Three Musketeers. I had no idea what the story behind the Man in the Iron Mask was. I knew nothing. Nothing.
The only time I'd ever seen this film was
uncultured.
On the United Flight. I don't know where it was, but it wasn't even one of those United Flights where you've got like a TV screen in the back of the seat in front of you. It's when you've got one big TV down the middle of the aisle.
Like a bus.
Like kind of like a bus. I guess you had multiple. You had like three TVs, but they were at the top, you know, center top of the aisle. Not even like above each group of seats kind of thing, but so you could plug in with your headset that I think probably at that time was just the tube.
Yeah,
that you plugged the holes into the rubber tubes.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Is he the, sorry, I want to make sure I have this right. Is King Louis... King Louis. Okay. So he is supposed to be the big dick of France, like the one that's always just been an ass.
I thought he was the one that everybody loved because didn't he rule for like almost 100 years or something, like 70 something years?
Well, his dad did.
I thought
he was the, I thought he was the butthole who in 1715, I don't know who I'm thinking of. I maybe have this wrong. I don't know. My French history is garbage. I don't remember anything.
Louis XIV was Louis the Great.
Right. That's who we're talking. That's who is. That's who.
That's who we are talking about. That's who's portrayed in this film.
Right.
He reigned for freaking 72 years. It's the. It's an insane story. This guy.
72
years. His brother was the good one.
That's right. His first 16 years, and I think that's where they were playing at, because the first 16 years he was a real dick. But you know, D'Artagnan, he wanted to make him better. Oh, he can be a good king, and I think that was kind of like foreshadowing what was supposed to come.
Mm-hmm. Let's see when he died here.
So he really did in real French history, like he did kind of change.
Be a dick? I don't know. I'm sure King Louis was a dick just like everybody else when he was 16.
The other thing is he would have been very young here as portrayed by DiCaprio, and that's pretty accurate. He was okay. So I did a little digging here. His dad was 41 when he died. So the previous king died at a pretty early age, and then this kid basically just took over at age like 4.
Right.
And then he died at age 76. That means he pretty much went from 4 years old to I'm king for the rest of my life.
Just remember, folks, this is not based on a true story. If you're listening, it's just, it's got elements of things that are factual.
Yeah.
But the man, in the iron mask was a real thing.
Yes. Yes.
Historians have tried and tried to figure out. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting. Like, maybe the reason this guy managed to rule for 72 years is because he was two people. Maybe it's possible.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's a fun idea.
Mm-hmm.
The one actor who played a bad guy in the 80s that isn't in this film, Alan Rickman, played Louis XIV in 2014 in a movie called A Little Chaos.
Because he felt like he missed out.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. It's like, fine, I'll make my own Louis XIV
Bring
film.
Me those detonators.
Go screw yourself.
Yes. No detonators. Here's the thing about him, though. He auditioned for the role of Atmos? What's his name?
Athos.
Athos. Athos. Athos. Athos. Athos.
John Malkovich's character.
Yeah, John Malkovich's character. He had actually tried to get it and didn't get it. They gave it to Malkovich.
Oh, really? So Rickman really tried to be in this one?
He did, and so did Kevin Kline. Kevin Kline was supposed to be Aramis, or maybe also Athos or something.
While we're looking at IMDb, I want to draw your attention to the section on the main page for the film called Storyline.
Okay.
Just got a summary of the film. Paris is starving. The King of France is more interested in money and betting women. Blah, blah, blah. All that remains now is de Tarnagin. Will he stand against his longtime friends or do what is best for his country? Written by Leonardo DiCaprio.
No. Wow.
Did you read the part in there? That's funny. You didn't read I love that. Did you read like the third part of that sentence when it says when a young soldier dies for the sake of a shag?
Oh,
sure. Is that
fine?
Wow.
What? I now believe this was written by Leonardo DiCaprio.
Gotta be.
Yeah, maybe he did. I don't know. Like, he didn't seem like he was. So you're right. He was currently basking in the fame and the money of the Titanic success. And then 2 years before that, he was in that Romeo and Juliet remake thing.
Oh, right, right.
And then before that, it was kind of just Gilbert's Grape, right? Before that?
Right.
Pretty much. And
before then, it was like Growing Pains. Right. Growing Pains.
Right. Don't you think when you hire somebody whose name is Leonardo DiCaprio, wouldn't you expect they'd be able to do at least one accent?
Yeah.
Right.
He does a really good Southern one in like...
really like Leonard Capri or something. And he just like...
He does a good one in Django, but I've only ever heard him do like American regional stuff. I've never heard him do anything.
Southern. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Outside of that. I don't know what this... I guess he's just a California guy in this new Tarantino thing coming out, but I don't think he's got that kind of range. Like in The Departed, he kind of had a cool Boston affect. That was there.
Oh, maybe Gangs of New York. I need to see that again and see.
That's where he got all Irish. Yarr. Yeah, he totally did.
Yeah,
I love that movie. That I think that's my favorite DiCaprio movie.
It's very good. That's my favorite. It's very good.
Sure.
I mean, no kidding. If I'm picking though, I think Inception's probably my favorite.
Yeah, so
Inception's definitely the one I want to watch.
Yeah, it's right. of the genre choices. That's the one. If you're going by just like pure performance and like whatever, right, then you're probably got to go somewhere else. But yeah, I forgot he does do a very convincing Irish accent. He could have done that in here, and I would have been okay. I just don't like how American he was. He was like some brat, 17-year-old. Just going, these secret these cool doors are secret. They're awesome. Bring another girl in here. That's awesome. I love girls. Ah.
Hey, I could get anywhere I want in this castle by going through these secret doors. Don't forget to hit the like and subscribe button.
Yeah, exactly. Whoa. Exactly, dude. Hey, y'all. What's up? It's your boy. Like all that.
It's what's your boy, up, King Louie.
Sorry, YouTubers. We love you. We really do.
So how many... How many movies does our director actually direct? This is Randall Wallace, and he's written plenty of stuff, but he's only directed. And this is his first directorial.
Oh my gosh, he wrote writing. He wrote Braveheart with Mel
Gibson. he's written some great things. But then he turned in this homage.
Like I say, he's written some great stuff, like Braveheart,
like Starman. Like Braveheart.
He wrote Secretariat, right? He wrote
one episode of the TV series Starman. He didn't write the movie
Pearl Harbor.
He wrote an episode of Hunter.
I mean, come on. It felt, you know what? I believe it because this felt, a lot of times it felt like an 80s TV show because it was during Philippe's training. I was like, holy crap, who just turned on the A-Team music? We're about to have a learning fighting montage. Mm. And there was a lot of moments like that where it just kind of felt weird TV kind of thing. Like when they threw the fruit.
Totally agree.
And D'Artagnan slices
he went all fruit ninja. Remember Fruit Ninja?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That was weird.
I made a GIF of that this last night because it's cool.
That was a great little thing. But the film really missed a lot of opportunities to do more with that. Like they have riots in the street. They show it twice, but they don't really do anything with it. And eventually the film discards the subplot. And I hate it when that happens.
Really
that's like a trope alert, right? Like the discard the subplot.
Yeah, I'll play that.
It's just ridiculous.
The poor citizens of Paris, because they were they were portrayed so oddly because they were supposed to be starving, but most of those people didn't even look like they had missed breakfast, much less starving. And they had a lot of energy, you know, and they were running around holding on to rotten eggs so they could pelt musketeers as they went by down the alleys and stuff. Mm-hmm. They just seemed more disgruntled than really starving. So I don't know how angry they're supposed to be during that time.
Yeah, I don't know.
They seem very angry.
They didn't either. They didn't really focus on that. I'll tell you what's a very good depiction of that is the 2014 Assassin's Creed game called, I forgot the name of it. Damn it. The one that was all about France. But anyway, that one it's all about the French Revolutionary War and all that. Or the French Revolution rather. And it very, very much depicts all that business.
It's Assassin's Creed Baguette.
Yes, Baguette. 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 I can't believe I forgot the name of the damn thing. It's really good. It's better than people give it credit for, because at the time it was super janky at launch and also had no female protagonist and it was all controversial. And anyway, it's good now. I will say this. So he directed We Were Soldiers, another Mel Gibson joint. That was the next movie he directed. So Man in the Iron Mask was getting his feet wet. I think it showed his TV roots too much, and it felt like a TV show to me in a lot of ways, like Dunaway was saying. Secretariat, I quite liked, I remember. Now, I'm not really a horse movie guy, but I liked that. That was a good horse movie. I liked it.
Yeah, we're still looking for the right horse movie to force on Brian Dunaway.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks a lot for that. Appreciate that.
Yeah, maybe that's the
one. I thought we already did that. Did we watch a horse movie? Didn't you maybe watch some horse crap movies?
No, you just feel like we did, but we're still looking for the right one to because a force, of course.
But we watched that stupid urban cowboy. What we watched?
That was not a horse movie.
That was a horse movie. It was all about the horse.
No, that was just rides one day in Las Vegas off into the sunset.
That was Jane Fonda is Uncomfortable, the movie. That was what that is.
That doesn't count. If a horse is in the movie, you can't count it. It has to be the focus of the film, or at least name of the movie. If the name of the movie is Secretariat, War Horse, Black Beauty,
National Velvet, Sea Biscuit, Black Stallion, Hidalgo.
If you absolutely want me to change the channel, anytime you have a movie that features a young lady who has left town and has come to the country and has made this new friendship with a horse, I don't want to watch it.
You're like describing Flicka perfectly. We're going to watch Flicka.
That's probably it.
Joan of Arc, not Joan of Arc. Who was the ruler that was said to have, Marie Antoinette? Was that the one that was said to have,
she lost her hand.
Oh, was she fooling with a horse? Was that her deal? I don't know.
Who am I thinking of?
And you know what happens when you get your head chopped off? You do that. That's what happens.
Yeah, you go to Tijuana and have a horse show. Is what you do.
That's right.
But hold on a second. I don't know who that is. That's a new.
But you know this. Like, there's the rumor that she had sex with a horse.
Oh no. No? Hey man, don't be spreading rumors like that, man. Yeah.
Catherine the Great.
Really?
That's bullying.
Is that true? Yeah. I've never heard
that.
That's the
rumor. Is Catherine the Great had sex with a horse and
wow,
the harness broke and she got smashed by the horse.
You mean to tell you who puts a drama in Queen?
That's why you're always you always put the woman on top when you have sex with a horse. That's
wow. All right,
man. This queen in this movie put the drama in Queen for sure. Come on, and paralogued.
I was confused. Was she around the whole movie, or like, was she on vacation and suddenly came along for the middle part? I don't get it.
She was in mourning the entire movie because she could never get over once her husband had told her about the child that was taken away. She could never forgive herself and get over it. So she was always in the constant mourning.
You're talking about Queen Anne, right? Queen Anne just kind of moping around.
Queen Anne. Yeah.
Yeah. Queen Anne.
Until Philippe returned. And then she's all like,
great furniture, by the way.
Jazz! She was so excited.
She did have good furniture. They really did.
No, I don't yell at a lot of movies that we watch, but I actually yelled out loud during this movie. And it was during the scene when the three musketeers were on the boat. And they were trying to leave with Philippe, and somebody had grabbed hold of Philippe, and they were holding him, and they couldn't. They were having that tug of war. And I was literally yelling.
Yeah.
I was yelling. I was like, "What? That you cannot tell me they're going to get him."
I know. Oh, I was so mad. I'm going to hit you with oars.
I was so mad.
That was a really fun scene. And there's a lot of little bits like that that are like really fun. The pig chasing scene was fun and funny. Like I kept coming like highs and lows throughout this movie. Oh, I love this. And then the people would start talking and I'd be like, oh, I hate this movie.
By the way, Gerard Depardieu seemed to be hell bent on making sure that in his contract they let him be naked as often as he wanted to be.
God.
And what's funny about that is it makes sense now because I did a little bit of searching, and every French film he's ever been in, he's full on just man wiener in those. Like, there's no holding back for him. I mean, it's not like
I must get naked.
It's not straight up porn or anything, but it's just
I have a huge nose, and I must distract from it. Yeah. Look at my penis.
Yeah, but he was a beefy dude in this, like a strong looking guy. Yeah. So I liked that his fighting technique was like smashing lots of heads against walls, and you know he was kind of the Hulk of the group, and I don't know. I came in there thinking I was going to hate his role and it would be the worst. He was my favorite in the end, weirdly.
The most squirmy part that I experienced in this movie, as well as the part that grossed me out, I can't speak for Scott yet, but we share this one. It was when Porthos, Depardieu, he stuck that gun up that dude's butthole.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then he kept the gun. And he was like all like waving it around his head and stuff. I'm like,
He jammed that right up that guy's butt. I'm telling you, there's something with that guy, that actor. I think he's just like down to clown. And I think he suggests these things. He's like,
I don't think that was in the script either. I think the actor was just like really molested there. It felt bad.
I mean, there is that scene, and I think it comes up later in something I did in the thing here, but there's the scene where he's wrestling around in the grass or whatever, and they go to get him up. Oh, no, after he fell from the broken beam, that's what it was. And they go to get him up. Dude, he full on a-holes the camera. Like, it's just a big old butt. There's your butthole right there.
Have you seen my goatsy? Look at it.
It totally. I mean, I not that I paused and lingered or anything, but it's like
you totally paused and lingered. If you said you didn't, you totally
did. I didn't. I really didn't. But I wanted to screen cap it, and I may still yet do that just
Netflix
for you guys.
Netflix is gonna send somebody out to check on you, make sure you're okay.
Yeah, they very well might. I gotta find the one where I don't remember when that happened in the movie. It seems like maybe it was early on. He gets very depressed and suicidal. But he full on buttholes the audience. So chat room.
You know Netflix keeps those statistics, right? You know they know.
Oh, they always
that
know.
You're pausing. You know they know that you're pausing at that spot. You know it's.
They know I'm in there right now trying to isolate it. I'm trying to find it and then screen cap it for you guys, but I can't find it.
He's scrubbing the whole movie right now looking for the butthole scene.
I totally am, dude. You're not wrong.
Well, it's at 1 hour, 18 minutes, and 34 seconds.
I think I found it.
I think I found it. If this is a videotape, that part of tape would be totally stretched, thanks to Scott.
I found it, and when I get the scene, I'm going to send you guys Gerard Depardieu's butthole in Discord.
I will now block Scott.
Right. Yeah, block me on Discord because that's what's happening. It's coming on Discord.
So which
I was trying to look at my beef Wellington.
I meant to go back actually and review because I when the four musketeers were. Coming down the hall when they were being shot at by the young musketeers who did not want to look when they were shooting. Everybody was running straight except for one of the musketeers. He was zigging and zagging. And I was trying to remember which one it was because everybody else would have been totally dead. but at least one of them was zigging and zagging. I think it was Malkovich.
All right. I like a good zigzag. It's all right.
Yeah. You don't run straight into a musket.
No. You need to serpentine.
Wait.
Yeah.
Is that why they call them musketeers? Serpentine. Because they use muskets?
Yeah, but also you only use them once. That was the deal back then. The guns weren't reloadable, or they were, but they were arduously reloadable. Yeah, so
it's
you
like
would 10 fire.
Minutes, 10 minute reload time.
Yeah. So you'd fire one, drop the gun, and then it's all swordplay from there on, which is kind of fun. You know, it's a cool idea.
I love it.
Yeah. But they really should be called swordketeers.
Because they're mostly swordketeers.
Because the musket's not much of a. It just doesn't matter. The musket's not important.
Lansketeers or
ooh, I like that.
Fensketeers.
Pokesketeers.
Pokesketeers.
I'll tell you what they didn't do. They didn't give Raoul a gun because he went and faced that cannon face
that was
first.
So weird. The way it was cut. Scene. The way it was cut, it looks like he was attacked by the top of a hill.
It looked like it looked like slapstick because he stood up, he runs, and then we get like this really close up of a cannon hole right in our face. Boom.
Yep.
Yeah. Poor Sarsgaard.
Did you? Yeah, Sarsgaard. He figured
sprinkler cock blocked, basically.
What? There was so much cock blocking in that part.
Can we ask about that for a second? Let's slow down and talk about the sprinklers. Was that even a thing? Yes. Could you do that?
Those were sprinklers. Those were fountains.
Fountains.
Yeah, but could
you could totally do that.
Okay, but did they have that?
But would you
then
have all the controls for the fountains on a little plinth right next to the king's
gravity feed? I can't. Let's just say I think the technology was there. Did this actually exist? I can't say that, but I think the technology. Aqueducts.
I mean, that implies all kinds of plumbing implications that I don't think they had in 1715.
I think this existed in the 1600s. I think there was enough gravity feed that you could use. I think that would be possible.
Okay.
I think
You're the king of France. You're going to have fountains and they're going to have switches. Like, it's totally doable.
Okay. I guess so.
But would he touch them? That's the question. Well,
I mean, according to answers.com, the first fountain. Oh, never mind. It's the first fountain pen. Never mind. Yeah. Oh.
Love that. But now I gotta know when was the first fountain pen?
Yeah,
you gotta
tell
me. Oh, 1856.
You can't dangle that in front of me.
Wow. That's later than I would have thought. 1856.
Yeah,
I would have thought
it still gets stuck. Still gets clogged at the bank.
I just want to say I loved all the different chateaux that they filmed around for the exteriors. I seriously loved it. I'm like, I just want to go to France and I want to sit in the grass near all of these different beautiful. But it was weird to me that they used so many different chateaux. Like, were they trying to say that Louis was moving around, or did they think we wouldn't notice that that one has a blue roof and that one has a pink roof and those are totally different buildings?
I think they just I think it's just background dressing, and if it changes, the audience isn't expected to scrutinize. It's one of those deals. But they also, there's a bunch in here about how they didn't film. Some of this is not filmed in France. Some of it's other parts of Europe. And I can't find the place where I read that, but it's because I'm looking at this director guy.
I will say this about this movie as well. This had a huge amount of quotable quotes for a period piece kind of movie. I was shocked. It almost felt like an action film where you have these one-liners.
It sounded like a Jeopardy category, so by the way. And the next category is quotable quotes. That's what it sounded like.
I didn't come away remembering quotes very well from this film.
Oh, really?
No.
So you don't remember
all
stuff
for
like
one, but that was kind of from something else,
right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was some stuff.
That's their legend, but yeah, they don't have anything that's like. I mean, I captured a bunch of stuff. None of it's
loving you is a treason against France. I don't know why. Everything they said just felt like. It just felt like it was right out of an action film. It just
I did enjoy her Anne Poirot. However, no wait, that was his mother. Judith Godrick. Mm. But I'm telling you, the movie hates women. Mm. This movie is just like women are not a thing. They are not heroic. They do not have any power. Nothing. And I mean, maybe that's a little accurate. But damn, this movie is so manly and so full of men. Like, there's like 10 men who do everything in the movie.
Well, would you say that's a thing? Like, this is a great question, actually, I have about historical representation in film today. Because when we make something new, I think as a society are more inclined to go, yeah, we need to quit troping this out where it's all the men saving everybody and the women can't do anything for themselves. That's bullcrap. So let's change that up. But when you're depicting something from a historical perspective, it's hard, right? Like, because if you want to put out a movie and say, you know, this is how it was in France, you're still going to have people go, give the women more to do. The men suck. Like, you're going to have a freak out, even though you're kind of showing things the way they were. It's difficult, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm not calling for a Three Musketeers movie starring Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy, and Kate McKinnon. Although I would,
love that. Yeah,
is there a possibility that's not in the works?
Leslie Jones as King Louis XIV. I don't know, but it's like I don't think that's the answer. I just think that this, like, when you get back before a certain point, and the point's close, like, when you get back before movies made, I don't know, 10 years ago, it's not even a thought. The people making this movie never thought, like, oh, this is going to make women look like nothing but sexual playthings, crazy people who kill themselves, and a completely deluded mother. I don't understand how she's so quiet and complacent about this whole situation.
Well, yeah? She's very sad, you know. Her one son's got a big old mask head and the other one's a dick. Like, she doesn't know what to do. Poor Queen Anne.
Yeah.
Just
poor Queen Anne.
Languishing in the richest corner of the world, chilling out with every possible thing you'd ever need. Poor Queen Anne.
I will tell you, this movie, like, constantly I was like, okay, when I started watching this movie, I said, okay, this is the movie I'm going to turn my brain off because there's not a lot of accurate stuff. It's fine. So I did that. And as a result, I kept getting these soap opera moments where it's like, what? He's your dad. Mm. What? There's a twin, and he's in a mask.
You're the leader of the Jesuits.
What? Right. Exactly. You're the leader of the what? Mm-hmm. I did that a lot during this movie.
Yeah, this is all true. By the way, I just wanted to. This is still kind of an offshoot, but Brian brought her up, and I wanted to mention something I found about Catherine the Great. All right, so there was this. Oh, yeah. There was this rumor. So this isn't even the horse thing. There was this rumor that she had something called the erotic cabinet. And here's how it worked. Urban legend states that the erotic cabinet was ordered by Catherine the Great and was adjacent to her suite of rooms. According to said urban legend, the furniture was highly eccentric with tables that had large penises for legs. Penises and vulvas were carved out of the furniture, and the walls were covered in erotic art, statues of naked men and women inside, and some versions of legend state that some erotic artifacts from Pompeii were used.
Please stop humping my chair. Thank you.
I thought they found all that stuff. No, it's not.
It's unconfirmed reports of photographs of the cabinet. So there's they say that the account is dodgy, sketchy, and dubious at best, according to experts. This was stuff they found after the Second World War. And some of it, they say the Germans destroyed when they invaded. So anyway, there's no way to really know any of this stuff, but it's kind of awesome. I love the idea of some horny queen with her freaking penis table in the room. Something about that.
Well, leave it to a bunch of guys who can't even find the G-spot end table that...
anyway, and we're done with
this.
Right,
there's going to be a Downton Abbey series about this eventually.
Sure.
Starring Melissa McCarthy as Queen or Catherine the Great.
That'd be awesome. Actually, Downton Abbey movie's still being made, isn't it? That's the thing.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, I love that show. I miss it. It was. I realize it was basically a very highfalutin, well-made British soap opera, but I still really liked it. That was great. Speaking of accents, they were all good in there. Anyway, I was going to say the only trivia that really jumped out at me about this was what Leo's mask was made out of. And it says it was made out of poly. It was polystyrene, which made me laugh because you could have called this movie "The Man in the Polystyrene Mask," and it wouldn't have been as impactful.
Probably. Right? It wouldn't have been bad. Yeah.
Yeah. You could have done that. But
I thought about that because I was trying to for just a minute. My mind woke up and said, "Hey, Brian, what? Let's do some science. What if you did put a man in an iron mask? How would it affect the chemistry of his face?" And his shoulders.
The growth of his hair.
And his neck and that kind of stuff.
Would he have perfectly clear skin once he got out of that mask? Because I don't think so.
I don't know.
The whole thing, like, I could understand the mask being a leather mask with a couple of iron strips over the face. Mm-hmm. But, man, this thing with this tiny little holes for eyes and mouth, no. That you would just die. You wouldn't be able to sleep. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, you're gonna get sick.
I think if they were to do it as a leather mask with a couple iron strips, he'd look like the Gimp from Pulp Fiction.
Okay, that's fine. That's exactly right.
Yeah, and it was hard for me to take him serious when he was wearing it, and they were having the confrontations in that hallway where basically the last third of the movie seems to happen in that hallway. But where they're all fighting and stuff, and he's standing there and he's got his mask on, looking back at the other DiCaprio. I just couldn't take him seriously. He just looked like a Gimp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, you can't take that off. Like, you don't, it's not cool.
Stop it.
I really did want him to stick his tongue out of the hole at some point.
Yes, yes. I would love that.
Yeah.
Hey,
there's outtakes where he did that.
Oh yeah. Gotta be.
Had to.
Is it really a secret passage? If everybody knows about it, because there was like tons ridiculous. Of secret passages, but everybody knew them.
Yeah.
But, and also, if you're the king, and people could use the secret passages against you, then you have to post guards on them.
Yeah.
So they're really not secret. They're obvious. Right. You come in this huge ballroom and there's a guard standing over next to a bookshelf. What? I wonder where the secret passage is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel like
he's protecting those books.
I feel like the only person that should know is him. Everybody else shouldn't know, or what's the point? Because now you're at risk no matter what. I mean, look, I think Gabriel Byrne's very trustworthy as well, but eventually not. He turns on him in the end.
He had no trouble using the secret passages. And when the king called him out on it, he's like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, that's a practical weird thing there. And I didn't really get that. Also, okay, here's a good question. I don't know if this is a trope or what this is, but it seems like every movie that has an old-timey ball. They always have a royal ball going on.
Oh, sure.
And it seems always got these shit masks that everybody wears. It's the mask ball or whatever they call it. And the problem with it is, masquerade ball. It's a huge security risk because you've just made it easy for Gerard Depardieu to look like a lady and come in there and hide himself because he's got a mask on. Like every one of these movies, they have espionage, spy craft, and freaking murder happening during the masquerade balls. Quit having just dance.
Poor plot device. I really felt like I was watching Mission Impossible there for just a second with that whole mask scene. It was odd.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
he turns and now another couple of people have iron masks. What?
And was Randy, is Randy
I
right?
Liked that they were freaking
that,
out.
That was fine, but was Randy right that there were multiples being used, or was it just one person jumping around?
No, it was multiple.
I think there were multiples being used.
Okay. Yeah. All right. How'd they never explained that, did they? Where the hell did they get the extra masks?
Well, the idea, I guess, was supposed to be that they wanted him to leave the room in an anxious manner so that when he came back, it would be okay that he was off.
Yeah. No, I get that. But the masks, him looking around like he's seeing things.
Right.
Other people are going to see somebody standing next to him suddenly pull a metal mask up in front of their head.
Right. Wasn't that a very Shakespearean kind of thing to do in his stories? Didn't he write that kind of thing?
It annoyed me.
Just curious.
Everything about masquerade balls annoys me. Like straight up annoys me. It's either
red mask.
It's either perverts. Right. Like it's either like what was the Kubrick movie?
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah. It's Remind either that or it's these dumb people just prancing around, not knowing who each other is. That's just dumb. Just go dance. Go dance. Get some food. Have a nice night out. You know.
But how is royalty supposed to keep it on the down low? They're doing the
That's
things
exactly
unless
right.
they can mask.
The entire point of fancy masquerades is to get laid and have plausible deniability. That's the only point.
True story. Wow.
All right. Yeah. Is the chase the pig around thing a common thing back in the...
It was a thing in South Texas where I grew up, man. A greased pig scramble was so freaking fun.
Yeah, no,
rodeo.
It sounds like a blast. But I can't... All these people in fancy bustiers and I don't know what the men wear, whatever all that stuff is, like seemed insane to me. Like, who would do that? Just I guess you got one less piece of jewelry.
I straight up saw like five people just walk over the pig during the close up on the pig shot.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There's nobody
you
really
could
like
easily
you can just
catch
reach
that
down
pig.
And grab that. You don't even have to catch the pig. Just grab the little thing off his little antenna or just yank over that antenna, his horn. Just grab the thing right off his horn. Boom, you're done.
Oh, yeah. There was no need to capture the pig. Grab the thing. Go home.
Yeah.
None's the wiser. I mean, the king
go home with a huge diamond. Wow, what a, that was way too much prize. That's a trope, by the way. When the prize is a million times better than what it should be.
Right.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
What do you guys? So let's have theories though. Since it's the pig in a bucket or pig in a blanket, maybe we call him. But he disappears. The pig is no more. Do you think they ate him? Did he just get away? Is he somebody's pet now?
Well, we heard one last scream. While the king was trying to kiss Christine, and I think that was the last time we heard from the pig. So I'm assuming someone caught him at that point.
Right, but then what do you think they did with him? They got the jewel, but then did they eat the pig?
Oh, and then they made like little bacon strips.
I get
jewelry and bacon strips.
Okay, all right.
What's the equivalent of veal when it's pig?
Right.
Is like piglet, roasted pig. Oh, I guess, sure. Suckling pig is a huge delicacy.
Yeah.
It's so wasteful because, like, you want that pig to put on a couple hundred pounds. And
you put corn in.
Tastes a lot
you get
better
bacon out.
This. Yeah, no, that's how that works. That's how pigs
you
work.
You put trash in, bacon on the out. It's amazing.
It's incredible. Oh, my gosh, I want some pig now. What are you doing to me here? I want some pig.
I personally can't eat pig bacon anymore, but I still love turkey bacon.
No, turkey bacon's amazing, but it's not. Ibbot and I were talking about this. Turkey bacon isn't really. It's more like just a nice ham.
Yeah, it's
it,
good.
It doesn't taste like bacon. There's no crispy edges.
I can't get a good crisp up on a turkey bacon.
I agree, but also I don't feel like I'm going to die afterwards. I mean, I love the taste of bacon. So good.
Yeah.
By the way, you feel like you're going to die after a turkey bacon?
No. Regular bacon.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, I was doing a big mixed grill last night out by the pool, and a friend of mine brought a couple of different Beyond meats, and I just want you to know,
there you go.
They are definitely named correctly.
What is a Beyond?
Can we get you to say all that again with like a Mr. Howell accent?
Yeah.
I was making a big mixed grill out by the pool.
It did sound highfalutin, but tell me what a Beyond meat is. I don't know what that is.
I'm interested in trying some of that.
So it's like you've heard of like the Impossible Burger. This is a different brand.
Okay.
And Beyond is, I think, the first to go public. I think they're like, you can buy stock in Beyond right now.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, these were just, faux meat patties for burgers and faux meat dogs for hot dogs. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't really edible. I'm sorry.
So that was my question. I've never talked to anybody who's really tried that stuff. You didn't feel like it got even close?
I really didn't. And what I did was I pulled the sausage shaped veggie dog off the grill after, you know, getting a couple good grill lines on it, you know, I put it in the bun and I'm like, I'm going to just take a bite of the meat, the Beyond meat, and then dress it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I don't like how this tastes. And I covered it in mustard and onions, and I still didn't like how it tasted.
Wow. And this is what, like all soy based, or how are they doing this stuff? I mean,
yeah, there's soy and vegetables in this thing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd try it. I want to try it, but I fear what you're saying is just universally true, that they're never going to be able to capture why meat is good.
Well, I think everyone should try it, and maybe if it works for you, then it's a really good thing. Like, because the price is only going to come down. It's super good for the environment. However, do not try this right after you've just eaten a bratwurst from the butcher.
Yeah,
because like that was my problem. I had fresh in my mouth a bunch of pork fat swimming around on my tongue. You know. And so I had this idea of what it should taste like. I mean, you're way better off going in empty.
I get that. That was a fun little detour. I like that. I enjoyed
that. Right. Meat.
How about a little bit of the old deal here? The thing. The sound files. Want to hear sound files? How about that?
Yes. Clips.
Clips.
Yes.
Gosh dang it. Clips. The word clips was eclipsed from me. I couldn't think of it.
Mm.
All right. Let's do it. This is, that's for Dunaway later. Hold on, let me pull this down here. Okay.
What?
I don't remember the movie being so salty. It was a PG-13 film, but I don't remember any of like some of this stuff. And I'm going to play a couple of clips here that will be emblematic of that. So here's this one.
Sometimes there are more important things to life than a good pair of tits.
Really? Jeez, Scar from...
PG-13 sex. Boy, did we have it in this movie. PG-13 sex. We can hear it from outside the room, but then when we're in the room, you're perfectly covered, so we don't see your naughty bits.
Yeah.
Carefully placed arms and Gerard Depardieu's.
Yep, you're a director's cut away from an R rating, really. I mean, that's how close you are.
Oh, yeah.
Here's another one where Depardieu says a thing.
The feel of a plump pink nipple between my lips.
I don't ever want to think about him doing anything with a plump pink nipple.
I don't need to hear
male,
that.
Male, female, I don't care.
Yeah, it does not matter. Only that it is plump and pink.
Makes me want to pee up and down an airplane aisle.
Yeah, see, that's the other thing with that guy. You see a lot of his movies and you realize, oh, maybe he's just like this. Like the story of him on that airplane getting drunk and peeing all over the aisle is
absolutely
totally in character, you know? Like, that's something this character would have done. Here we go. Malkovich with no accent.
I can't take this. It's yours.
She died giving you to me. I want to die knowing it's on the finger of the woman my son loves.
Okay. You just said,
look.
I wouldn't say no accent. Malkovich's accent is ridiculously American.
Oh, yeah.
He plays the creepiest dad in this film. I don't know what it is about Malkovich, but he can be real creepy real quick. And for some reason, just everything he described for his love for his son just felt awkward.
Do you wish he had done this accent.
So you have my money?
Do you wish he would have brought that out again?
That yes. would have been better.
I guess I'm okay that he didn't do that. That's okay.
Oh, I think I would have enjoyed it if he had. I mean, not in a good way. It wouldn't have been it wouldn't have been good, but I mean, he's the reason I even liked that Rounders movie or whatever it was called. Was it Rounders?
Yeah. Rounders. Yeah. Good job.
Here's House. This is House talking to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Your Majesty.
Yellow sash.
But as your advisors, we feel it is our
duty.
Yes. Yes, our duty to inform you that there are riots in Paris.
Riots? But Paris is the most beautiful city in the world.
Okay, why? If you're going to have House show up and do a thing, he disappeared. That was it. We were done with him.
Yeah, he got himself killed by telling the truth. That's a trope.
Oh, right. He ordered his death right then, and then they never followed
him. Yeah, he did.
Okay. All right, we know what happened to him. But he was wearing that wig, and he looked like the character he plays in Blackadder. That was crazy. Kind of enjoyed that. Here's some terrible dialogue. Enjoy.
I'll never be a rich man, but you'll always have my heart.
Then I am richer than the king.
Blah.
Right.
Yeah. I can't do it. Here's more.
Sarsgaard's married to Maggie Gyllenhaal, if I remember correctly.
What?
He took a lot of A's.
Do you think he ever gets confused and wonders why Jake is in his bed, or you think he's just probably not? Okay.
I'll just lob one of those over home plate and let you swing for the fences.
Well, you set me up pretty good, so thanks for that.
Anybody have a favorite Peter Sarsgaard performance?
I have a least favorite, but I can tell you.
What's that? What's your least favorite?
It was the Kenzie one with Liam Neeson. He was the famous Laura sex Linney. Therapist thing. Laura
oh,
Linney.
Yeah, right.
That was an interesting movie, but he just weirded me out the entire time. And he's on full man wiener display, and I didn't like it. That bothered me a little bit. So other than that, he's fine in most things. Like I liked him in
Garden State.
Yeah, great in that. Mm-hmm. Good in that one where he does the test. It's about the guy who ran the tests on people where the people on the other side thought they were electrocuting people. I forgot the name of the movie.
What was that?
The Experiment, maybe? The
Experimenter. Experimentor, was it?
Experimentor or Experimentator, whatever it was. But that's it's good. It's very good. Well, actually, one of the guys he shocks is, the comedian. I can't think of his name all of a sudden. No, Gaffigan, Jim Gaffigan. It's very weird.
Jim, okay.
It's very weird that he's in that. But it's that's a great movie. He's like he's an interesting dude. And also as the bad guy in the remake of The Magnificent Seven, he's very
happy in that. Yeah, I remember him as the bad guy on in Flight Plan and playing a very convincing.
When can we watch Flight Plan? When is that going to be streaming?
Right now, Brian Dunaway. We're going to watch it right now.
Let's do it.
Turn it on. Let's go. An instant live sack right
now. Goodbye, everybody. Good night. Oh, I mean, let's keep going. All right, here's some more freaking horrendous dialogue.
Christine, isn't it? I would have thought it was impossible, but I do believe the excitement of this chase has made you even more beautiful.
Sire, I... Thank you, I'm...
You blush. You do not wish to look beautiful for your king?
No, sire. I mean, yes, yes. Of course, sire.
It makes me want to die. I hate everything about
script. The
I
script
think I
has
figured out
French...
a way to get out of this movie.
The script has the French king literally say, "I do believe." Mm-hmm. Seriously?
Yeah.
I do believe. And he said it. He didn't say, "You know what? I'm going to make this line better." No. He said, "I do believe." That's incredible to me.
That came out of his mouth hole. You're right. Here's some... what? I don't know what this is.
Has there been some disaster?
Oh, that's him freaking out. And then this part's a little longer than I played at the top, but I think this is weird.
You don't know what it's like to have a son, to have kissed his hair and smelled his breath as he slept.
I've never done that with any of my kids, where you sit there while they're sleeping and breathe their breath.
I'm not going to totally kissed a baby on the head last night because, man, they smell so great.
No, nothing wrong with that. I don't mean that. But, like, sitting there huffing on his breath, that's a weird idea. I'm not into that. That's weird. I mean, if it's a baby and who's getting down there going, oh, keep breathing, kid.
See, that's all cool and all. But once they get to be like 16 and heading to war, maybe you should tone that down a little bit.
Totally. Dad, what are you doing?
Yeah. I'm kissing your hair and breathing your breath. I'm sorry, smelling your breath. Ugh. This just sounds bad. All right, this scream is dumb,
if
I wrote.
If babies' breath weren't so good, why would they put it in prom bouquets and boutonnieres?
Yeah, babies are fine. I mean, there's one here today that's a wonderful little dude, and he smells great, and he's
go got... Go breathe his breath and let it report back. Let us know how it is.
Well, he just barfed, so we'll let that sit for a while. That. Yeah,
and maybe don't.
A little bit of breast. My own daughter's boob milk. Not into it. All right, here we go.
Oh, God. You keep bringing that up. Why do you keep bringing that up?
Because it's freaky. It's freaky. In my fridge, there are...
I know. You should keep that to yourself.
I know. It's TMI. But in my fridge and in my freezer, there's frozen versions of breast milk for my daughter. Totally normal, totally natural, all that. But it's still just weird to me. It's weird.
Have you considered a competition, a friendly competition, to see how much breast milk you can put in there?
Well, I need to work the nipple for a while, so I was thinking Gerard Depardieu might be able to help me out. All right,
could you milk me?
Yeah, could you milk me, Gerard? Here's the scream that the girl makes that's super dumb. So here you go. There you go. It's just dumb.
It's not good.
That's when she found out.
Oh, thank God I'm out of this movie.
Yeah. I was a little surprised Peter Sarsgaard was dead so early. I thought he would be around. Yeah. And for a while.
But he died in such fabulous manner.
Yeah, and the way they were setting him up, it just seemed like he would have, I don't know. I forgot how all this went when I saw it in theaters. All right. When anyone ever asks you what the best Terminator movie is, your answer is.
It's Judgment Day.
Okay, that's what you have to say.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what you have to say.
It's true.
And then this clip from, I want to thank Ibbett's mom for sending this to me. She found this in,
oh, wow,
in a drawer. Yeah, it's been a while since we've gotten some stuff from her.
Yeah.
And it was a clip of her talking to Brian when he was trying to figure out what tux to wear to prom. That's the backstory. Okay. Yep. So this is what she said to you after a while. I guess you were struggling with it, and she said this.
Wear it until you love it!
There you go. So that's
it ruined the whole rant that he said that.
Yeah.
Like, again,
how could you
look at the script? How could you look at this script and not stop and ask somebody, hey, can we put a better line here?
No, I disagree. That line made me chortle. It was amazing. I loved it.
Wait,
Give
me an example of a chortle. Give me one.
That was great.
That is a good chortle, yeah.
All right, the reason I like it is because, it reminds me of the Gilbert Grape days because his voice cracked a lot back then. So he does that again here.
Wear it until you love it! Wear it until you love it!
It's like, dude.
He was still finishing puberty. Yeah. He still had a little left.
He had a little bit of the piglet still caught in his throat.
Did you get the impression that Louis is a lot like DiCaprio? I mean, the legends are that DiCaprio is a smooth operator with the young ladies.
It's not even rumor. I put a little link in our Discord chat showing a graph. This graph is fantastic, by the way. It's if you scroll up there, basically it shows you DiCaprio's age going up, all the way from 24 to 44. Yeah. Yet all of his girlfriends,
in other words,
never get any higher than 25.
Yeah.
So he keeps getting older, but they keep staying the same age.
They keep staying the same age. Exactly. Yep.
That's interesting.
I can't actually look at this chart anymore because I actually burned the host channel after Scott told me he was going to post
Depardieu's anus. So,
which I did.
Burned down our private channel. Yeah, thanks.
Recent one is Camila Maroney. He was 43 when they started dating. She was 20.
Oh, man. All right. Nice. I mean, you know.
Hey,
sure.
You know, good for him.
I guess.
Is it good work if you can get it.
Yeah. Is it good for him, though? I mean, he just keeps leaving them by the time they crest off at 25 and moving on to the next one. That seems like a bad lifestyle. I don't know. I can't judge. I don't know. I don't know what's going on over there.
Right. What do you do?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Dunaway has no words.
Yeah, I don't really.
I mean, I was going to, for just a second, I was like, well, just scientifically speaking, I guess a woman might be in her prime for mating, so it'd be a good idea because maybe the possibility of having a boy to carry on your lineage would be a good idea. And I was like, I'm not defending that crap.
Yeah, plus it sounds like you're talking about an actual king again and not an actor in Hollywood, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, well, is there a chart? Is that chart for DiCaprio's sex life or is it for
It's Louis? DiCaprio's sex life.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, that's the shock. That's the thing.
I thought we was talking 1600s King Louis. I'm like, well, that how it was back then. But you're talking. Oh, I got you.
We're talking Leo.
I can't look at the room. I told you.
Yeah. No.
He's the Wolf of Every Street, apparently. Yeah,
no kidding.
When I say this is a celebrity couple with a huge age difference, who do you think of?
Patrick Stewart. Yeah, no, Patrick Stewart. Patrick Stewart and his 30-year-old wife, or whatever she is.
Okay.
I used to think of Demi Moore and
Bruce Willis. Or Ashton Kutcher.
Ashton Kutcher. Yeah.
It's usually the other direction, but you're right. That's a good example of that.
And I thought for years it was Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones was the one everybody always came up with. We're kind of past it now. Like that, they're not the example of that thing. Well,
are they still together? I know that when he had the whole HPV thing, there was some rumble that the two of them were splitting up. Are they still together?
I feel like I just saw them at the Oscars. I feel like together, wearing rings, like just this year.
Yeah, I think they're together still. I think what keeps them together is they're both taking very good care of that dried up old reed known as Kirk Douglas. I think that keeps
them. They've got a focus. They've got a joint focus right now, but once that's over.
They have a project. It's like having kids. You know, you work through it, help raise them, get them old enough, and then you break up later. I think that's what's going on there.
did anyone even like did Harrison Ford even come to mind? Like,
I mean, Calista Flockhart wasn't that much younger than him at the time.
Yeah, how far apart are those two?
20?
At least 20 years. At least.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Let me look her up. She was born in 64, so she's in her 50s now. What would that make her? 50.
Let's say 55.
Okay, so she's 55. He's 72. I mean,
that's a pretty big gap, but it didn't come to mind. That was the main thing. When I said the category, that did not come to mind.
No, it's when girls are in their like 20s and the guys are in their 40s is where I start to, I guess that's close to that. So that's 15 years for them instead of the normal 20. But also he was getting it on with Carrie Fisher. It turns out we all found out recently while she was 19 and he was 35. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like that's crazy. 35 and 19. That seems.
Yeah.
I know that's legal.
But anything. Right. No. So when you're, I think anything over 25 and 19 probably would feel a little skeevy.
And the reason why is because someone, legally 18 in the U.S. age of consent. However, we all know that in order to make full life decisions, you have to actually be an adult for a certain amount of time and have a little bit of experience before you can make, really good decisions based on your own data. Mm-hmm. And so when we think of somebody in their 30s, it's like if they want to date somebody in their 50s, they've probably lived enough life to, make that choice.
Yeah, that was the discussion when Amal Clooney and her husband got married. She was in her 30s. And so it was totally like understandable.
Yeah. But also, I mean, look, it's a potent combination of age, money, fame, and penis. Those three things together, they create really a toxic thing. Because now everybody wants you. Everybody wants to be around you. It's really because you're famous and you have money. At the end of the day, if you didn't have any of that, they wouldn't give two shits about you, and you wouldn't date a 24-year-old.
I often give Corey Feldman a bigger pass than he might deserve for some of the stupid crap that comes out of his mouth. And the reason why is because I'm like, this dude has been in the machine since he was a child.
Yeah.
And he has no perspective on what the real world is like. So I mean, it's hard to go, I can't believe he said that stupid crap. But it's like, how would I be if I was a child star and rode up through all that crap?
You live like kind of a sheltered life where you've got a bunch of people who just tell you yes all the time. A lot of these people, it's no wonder that they make these bad decisions because they've never had any negative influences
resistance
in their life saying, oh, dude, don't do that. That's dumb. Why would you do that?
You just reminded me of Louis the 14th, and I found it.
True story. Corey Feldman, the line
woman
is
put in my quarters. Yeah.
I found it utterly bizarre that in our first look at Louis XIV in this thing, he is overriding some military plans and, maybe saying something that makes sense and is a good idea, because I think it works against him as a character. Like, I'm like, oh, I kind of like him, I think, in this moment, and I don't want to. I shouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what was so amazing about DiCaprio's, you know, his swagger or what he brings to his roles is you can feel very empathetic towards him one second and then hate him the next. He's really good at just popping in and out of that. That's mm-hmm. that's charisma.
By the way, my son, Nick, is dating someone named Callista at the moment. I meant to mention that when you brought up Callista Flockhart.
It's a name you never hear.
I completely agree. Cool. And I feel like I want to go over to her house and ask her parents if they were big fans of that. What was that show called?
Ally McBeal.
Is that going to be like the first thing you say as soon as you knock on the door? It's like they open the door and you go, hey.
Well, apparently she's coming over tonight and I get to meet her and I may ask her. I just ask her. I'll just go, hey.
Yeah, I'm sure she's never heard it. Go ahead.
I'll say, hey, colostomy. I mean, Callista. Sorry.
Oh, jeez.
No, I better not do that.
Was it a Greek goddess? What was Callista? Like the
let's find
out. I thought it was a TV show on Nickelodeon where she explains it all. No, wait, that was Callista.
Callista explains it. Callisto is the largest moon of Jupiter, second largest moon of Jupiter. I remember Callisto from the X-Men, too, from the Morlocks. She was the leader of the Morlocks, but... Mm-hmm. I thought there was a Callista.
She was punk.
Callista's, here's the origin of the word, comes from the Greek for most Greek, beautiful okay. or feminine. As a name, it's this derived from the Greek name of the huntress myth of Callisto, who was loved by Zeus. The name Callisto became Callista during the Latin feminization of the name.
I got to say, this may be the most scattered shot we have ever taken right in the middle of Clips. It is the most tangent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, right. Actually, what would surprise you even more is it was right at the end of Clips.
Oh, was that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Time for the Film Sack Checklist. Double Leo, check. You can bet that mass smelled pretty bad. Check.
Mm-hmm.
An Irishman, an American, a Brit, and a Frenchman walk into a bar. Check. Star Trek connections, according to Daryl, none. He says not one. Wow. And that surprised me. I thought we'd find some production, stunt, double, something. And there's nothing. Zip.
They never once got freaking Hugh Laurie. I'm mind blown right now.
A little myself.
That guy will do anything.
I agree. It seems like he would have been a perfect one-off foil for an episode of Voyager or something. And we got nothing.
Cardassian leader or something.
Yeah. None of that stuff. So apparently, unless someone else can find it.
It just feels like DiCaprio should have been like a foil in the next generation to Wesley Crusher or something when he was really young.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great.
Like in that episode the Winona Judd, or no, the other Judd, Ashley Judd. She was in that episode. Judd,
Yeah. It just feels like he would have been like one of the kids on that planet or something. Mm-hmm.
Let's go play balls and cones. Come on.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Balls and cones.
You sounded like Harry Carey there for a second, or Will Ferrell's Harry Carey. Hey, you want to play some balls and cones?
Let's go play a game of balls and cones.
I love that. I watched that recently, the one we did with Jeff Goldblum. It's a gift, and we should all watch it all the time. It's so good. I think it was after Harry Carey died, even. Anyway. Mm. All right, let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up. The soundtrack, great. I give it a U for unremarkable. It just wasn't. It's fine. It just didn't really stand out. Don't really remember it. It's just sort of there.
Boy, if it had a Bryan Adams song, you'd remember it.
Yep. Everything he does it for us. All right, sum this thing up in 280 characters or less, if you please. Let's start with Randy.
The man in the iron mask. Every day, it's the same thing. Your older friend bringing some girls over, and they're 30 years younger than him with their boobs spilling out, and he just wants to share them with you, but you're some kind of priest, and you're busy praying, just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Yeah! I knew that was coming. Brian Dunaway.
That one was coming.
Yep.
I was totally shocked. What? the man in the iron mask. No, my love. You shall burn in hell. But not I, for I am the king of sacking, ordained by God. And you are but a weird little French-themed film with a flatulent de pardieu.
I had a clip where he says fart when you want to. Hold on. Now that you just said that.
fart when you want to.
Did I miss it?
You can fart when you want
to. Oh, yeah, I missed this.
You can fart when you want to.
I forgot to play this.
Turn your butt around.
Listen to this.
Make love as if you don't care and fart whenever you wish.
It seems like those two go together.
Fart whenever you wish.
Yeah, make love when you want to. And fart whenever you wish.
But I think that I have control over my sphincter.
I'm confused because I wish a lot. Like, I make a lot of wishes. I'm a person who, like, all day long, I wish, I wish, I wish. Mm-hmm. And, like, if I farted whenever I wished, that would just be, that'd be too much. It'd be way, way too much fart.
Oh, yeah. No, if you wish to fart, that's different than have to fart.
Yeah.
Or need to.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. This would be a good time for a fart.
Yeah. I'm gonna choke on my own self when Brian made a joke that wasn't even that funny, but I just about died right there. All right. Excuse me.
Then you're really going to love my Twitter post.
Oh, good. Let's get to it. And now Brian Ibbett.
Man in the Iron Mask, Leonardo DiCaprio, lands the role he was born to play, the role of two Leonardo DiCaprios.
Nice. Nice. It's true. Has he ever done that before?
There's two of me.
By the way, this is a very tropey thing that we didn't even talk about. The movies where somebody has a twin doing an opposite thing, and then we're going to swap them in, and you know, it's like Dave, right? Or it's like Dave,
Kevin Klein. Yeah.
Hit that trope alert though. Yeah, come on.
Who are we thinking?
Not freaky Friday.
So let's call it Unexpected Twin, because I don't want it to be a movie that starts and you know there's twins. Okay. Yeah. All right. Oh. So what's your movie?
It's like, not what the comes same. To mind? By the way,
Christian Bale, the magic thing, the Prestige.
Oh, right. Wait, ooh, was he in? There was no twin, was there? Was he a twin in that? No. Yeah.
In the Prestige, he makes clones, right?
No, he doesn't make clones.
I don't remember. I don't think that's correct. It was just him versus Wolverine or Hugh Jackman.
No, the whole reason that he was able to do the trick the way he did is because he had a twin that nobody knew about.
Right. No, Brian's right. That's how that ended.
But then he's also given a cloning machine. I'm sure of it.
What?
No, there's no. It was like set in the 1800s or something. There's no cloning machine. I think you're
thinking of Terminator Salvation or something.
I don't know what that is you're thinking of. That's very weird. We'll have to look that one up. I was going to say, I forgot. I had one in my head. But this
Hold on a second. Hold on. I'm got to look this up because Randy is so
adamant.
Scattershot.
Insistent on this.
What are you doing? What's going on right now?
We're looking up your thing. We're trying to find out if there's a clone.
I'm looking up this thing.
Stop trying to counter my point.
There's literally a scene in The Prestige where you see all the clones have drowned in all of these different tanks. They've got
I believe you, Randy. Oh, I won't challenge your
authority.
That
was the Tesla bit. No. Wait. Yeah, Tesla helped Hugh Jackman. It's the other way around. It wasn't Batman didn't have clones. Hugh Jackman did.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes.
And it was a bunch of tanks with multiple Wolverines Jackmans. In them.
Yes.
Jackmans, right. Yeah.
Jackmen.
Dude, that movie has right. Black Widow, Batman, Wolverine, and Alfred in it. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's also a very good movie.
What's the guy's name from Black Panther? The Andy Serkis, but it's the
I know what you mean.
Shoot, yeah, he's the bad guy in Black Panther. His name is. He has a sound thing on his wrist in the comics, and his character name is Dick Bedergader.
Dick Bedergader. Yep. Old Dick Bedergader doing his dastardly deeds.
Claw. Claw. Thank you.
Oh, not Dick Claw. I thought she was going over Dick Claw.
No, okay. Not Dick Claw. You don't want a Dick Claw. That's bad news.
All right.
Who? Ibbett went. Well, yeah, Ibbett went. And so now.
Ibbett, read us your Twitter post again.
No, don't do it. Here's this.
Oh.
I was just handed this piece of paper here, which is definitely not a Taco Bell wrapper. It says it has alternate titles. These are almost called two different things. This was almost called Blaming John Malkovich. You know, instead of becoming, it's blaming, see?
Yeah.
Because it was his fault.
Being John Malkovich.
Or Gerard Depardieu's Pistol in the Bum was just about the name. Yeah. I'm glad that Dunaway brought that up earlier. Boy, I can't stop coughing on that old Ibbett joke.
So painful.
It's because you eat Taco Bell.
Well, I've been eating it here. It's just sitting here. It's just a wrapper.
Because it was eight.
I'm the DJ.
Yeah, because it was eight. You done ate it already, son. That's your problem. I mean,
that's why you got the wrapper only.
Yeah. What, do you keep the wrapper for, you know, for later tasting?
I just haven't thrown it away. It's just sitting here. I need to get the garbage can nearby. That's what I need. All right, here's a call we got. We get calls sometimes. 801-471-0462 is the voicemail line. If you call and leave a voicemail there, I'll play it on the show. This one refers to something Dunaway said, and we'll play it now. Here you go.
Hey, Film Sackers. This is Daniel from Nebraska, longtime listener, first-time caller. On an earlier episode, I heard Brian Dunaway talk about the film Blast from the Past, and on your Mummy episode, I heard you talk at length about Nathan Fillion and Brendan Fraser. Well, my wife and I watched that recently, and it turns out that the good guy and bad guy is Nathan Fillion as a bad guy and Brendan Fraser as the good guy. It's currently streaming on Hulu, and I would be elated if you would consider doing that for the future. Thanks for all you do. Look forward to future episodes.
So, Dunaway, you've seen this movie? Blast from the Past? All right. Sorry, we had a bit of a glitch. Dunaway, do you know that movie?
Wait, was it Blast from the Past, you mean? Or was it
Blast from the Past.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
All right. Did you know that Brendan Fraser and freaking Nathan Fillion were in that thing? Because when we talked about it, I don't think we knew that.
I don't believe I remember anything about Nathan Fillion being in that. So, but it's been probably at least a good maybe 10 years since I've seen it last.
Oh, well, it's
that
old,
movie's
then.
All about the Christopher Walken, though. Like, that's the reason to watch Blast from the Past. Mm-hmm. And trust me, if it was ever streaming, we would sack it. Mm. However, I have been searching Brendan Fraser on Netflix for a decade now, and I've only ever seen three of his movies streaming, and they're all streaming right now, and they are called The Mummy Returns, and The Mummy Tomb of the Dragon Emperor. I don't know what it is about Brendan Fraser, but man, I want to sack more of his movies.
I do George of the Jungle. I do what's the one where he's trapped in a bunker for 25 years? Oh.
That is Blast from the Past.
Oh, that is Blast from the Past. Okay. Yeah. Oh, see, now it's coming, and it's coming back to me what that even is.
Yeah.
All right.
He's right. I forgot about the ex-boyfriend being Cliff. He was Nathan Fillion. I forgot about that.
That's hilarious, because our whole conversation was those two should be in a movie together, or Nathan Fillion could be, I think we were talking about Uncharted movie or something. And now Nathan Fillion would be a perfect character for that.
For some reason, I was thinking that was Ryan Reynolds in my memory for some reason. Wow, it was Nathan Fillion. Wow. Makes sense.
You're always dreaming of Ryan
Reynolds. Apparently.
Who isn't? Yeah. Captain Al, you know?
Yeah. Well, two guys in a pizza place. What are you going to do? Wait, no. How did that go? What was the name? Two guys, a pizza place, and a girl.
A girl in a pizza place.
Right. It was long.
Then it ended up being two guys in a pizza place, though.
Oh, did the girl leave?
Oh, really?
I didn't know that.
Seems like that's what happened.
That sounds like a job for Detective Pikachu. Detective Pikachu. You know, the one.
Sure, my favorite.
We also got an email from Rob from Fort Wayne, Indiana, who says, "Hey, Scott, Brian, and Randy. Normally, I pay no attention to this type of thing, but for some reason, it caught my attention this last episode." This is a little while back. Anyway, it says, "I Am Legend was episode 419. How the hell are you going to burn through episode 420 on anything other than Half-Baked Friday or Cheech Marin and Tommy Chong's offerings?"
Yeah.
I'd like to use it.
And we were near April 20th at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, we're talking about what we want to do, and we just didn't feel like we were the people to do that.
Yeah. And just going, you know, straight pot joke. It's a little played, you know, everybody does it. So I wasn't that worked up about it. But he says this: I'd like to use a listener veto and redirect you guys to one of these smoke-filled screenplays I've mentioned above. Puff, puff, give us all your sack on one of those tasty buds. Thanks for killing countless of hours of windshield time for me in the past and future to come, Rob from Fort Wayne.
There is so much Doug Benson in the podcast verse. Like, you can listen to Doug Benson for 1,000 hours, and you probably should.
I like Doug Benson. He's funny.
Also, I had dropped the girl from the two guys and a girl in a pizza place, but actually they dropped the pizza place.
Oh, did they really?
It was just two guys and a girl?
Yeah. So they dropped the pizza place, not the girl.
That's basically just Three's Company, but reverse.
Don't search that on Bing.
Yeah, don't add a cup to it.
No.
Where they could have like, all right, one guy, a girl, a pizza place, and a small dog.
Yeah.
And a caveman.
And a caveman. Always add a caveman. That's it for your emails. Thanks for those, guys, and your phone calls. Again, the email address is filmsack@gmail.com. If you want to leave a voicemail, 801-471-0462. Our next movie will be what?
Eight-Legged Freaks.
Oh, I never saw it.
Freaky. Yep.
This is a David Arquette joint, and it also has Scarlett Johansson and Kari Wuerer, and I think it's about spiders.
Yeah, giant spiders. Eight-Legged Freaks.
Or octopi.
Yeah. I don't have, I didn't see this movie, so I'm excited for that because I didn't see it, but also aren't we, isn't this just kind of its day anyway? It was kind of a Sharknado attempt at this sort of thing, very sardonic and, you know.
Absolutely. This was not, if I remember correctly, it wasn't too many years after Arachnophobia, and so that was kind of like this resurgence, I believe.
The reason I hadn't seen, we've done Arachnophobia on the show now, and the reason I hadn't seen Arachnophobia or this one at the time is because my wife refuses to see anything with giant spiders in it or any spiders in it. She's just not going to do it.
I don't recall this ever being at the theater. I know it was, but I don't know if I just didn't see the advertising and the marketing. I was not aware of this until it came out on DVD, and I purchased the DVD.
Yeah.
And so that's probably how I'll be watching it.
This is a 2002 joint. So big CGI, you know, this already freaks. I don't know if I'm going to like this. I don't like spiders either.
Oh, because you're arachnophobic?
A little bit.
Oh, trust me, you won't be arachnophobed.
No, they're more like, if I remember correctly, they're more like Starship Trooper creatures than actual spiders.
Scarlett Johansson, I know you said that, but it glossed over it until I just saw her face and went, oh, wait, she's in this? All right. She did better for herself than everyone else in this thing. So, good job.
Oh, yeah.
Good job, Scarlett. Scar-Jo,
as
they say.
You can't say that. David Arquette's had a great career.
Oh, yeah. You think David Arquette's career compares well with Scarlett Johansson's? You think that's a thing?
They're like neck and neck.
No.
You can find David Arquette on Netflix in Amanda and Jack Go Glamping from 2017. What a great, fine film.
Yeah, that compares really well.
Did we ever watch the wrestling movie with David Arquette?
No.
You know what I'm talking about? The one where they're trying to get tickets to the wrestling movie?
No.
No Holds Barred. What was it?
How old is it? When did this come out?
It was around 2002. It was 2000, and it was Ready to Rumble. And it has one of my favorite stupid scenes with David Arquette when he's trying to get some free drinks because he's a lazy person. Mm-hmm. And he wants a free icy. And so he goes in, but first he scratches his butt with his finger, and then he goes into the convenience store with his Slurpee, and he puts the finger right up this guy's face and goes, "See, you smell that?" And it was just
that's
so gross.
That's already sounds like a movie I don't want to see. It sounds awful.
I am going to refuse to watch any Scott Conn films.
Totally watching it.
Why not Scott Conn films?
5-year moratorium on Scott Conn in my life.
Oh, wow. Really? What's going on with him? See,
we just saw him. We watched that thing just a couple weeks ago, Into the Blue, and I'm just like, I cannot stand Scott Conn for a while.
So no Ocean's movies for a while?
No.
Wait, Scott Conn was in Ocean's movies?
Yeah, Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13.
What did he do in those? I don't remember.
He was one of the.
He was Scott Conn. He was Scott Conn starring as Scott Conn.
He seems pretty.
It was basically him and Casey Affleck as, you know, kind of these two guys trying to one up each other with tech.
Oh, I totally forgot they were in that. You're right. They were totally in that. Okay. They're so throwaway, those characters. But I understand, Randy. I understand your feeling. I get it. By the way, David Arquette, the same year, was in multiple episodes of WCW Thunder and Monday Nitro, which was a wrestling deal. So he was going all in on that wrestling crap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is about the time you met Courtney Cox, and then now they're not together anymore. Oh, it's too bad.
Next week, Eight-Legged Freaks.
Eight-Legged Freaks, everybody. Come on back for the good times that will surely be had here on Film Sack with us. Let's see, if there's four of us, so we also are eight-legged freaks, aren't we?
Well, we're eight legs of freaks.
Eight legs of freaks.
We're also like an octopus. We have eight arms.
Oh, hey. How many nipples? Eight nipples?
No. Yep. I knew this was coming.
Yeah, eight nipples.
I knew this was coming. Yep. God damn it.
Seven testicles. Sorry, Dunaway. Just kidding.
Wow, way to out him.
Yeah.
Right?
You guys don't want to hear about it.
I really don't need us to count.
It's not really gone as much as it's just like sucked up in there. So. Right.
Been absorbed by the other one.
It'll drop. I hear it'll drop. So it's okay.
Absorbed by the other
one. It's still there. It's taking a trip.
Yeah, I get it.
And oh my God, I just opened the host chat channel. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Oh yeah, you guys haven't seen the butthole? There's the butthole. See? Check that out. Yeah, no, it's bad. Depardieu he's into it.
That's two ham hocks I did not need to see. Thanks.
It looks like something you'd find in the butcher section of your grocery store.
It does. It does.
Yeah. Don't eat it. That's what I would say to that. All right. That's it for the I can't look at it either.
It belongs in a museum.
We're going to be back next week. I can't wait for it. It'll be great. Until then, filmsack.com is our website. Please go there. Find us on Twitter at filmsack or leave us reviews where you get your shows. That is going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Fart when you wish.
We'll see you next week. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Wow.